It's Thursday, the 2nd of November. Today, Guardian columnist Gabby Hinsliff on why some people just can't stand vegans. But first, we're going to Wisconsin for the midterms.
Hello?
Hello, is that Gary?
Hello, London.
Hello, Racine. How is it out there?
Out there? You know, Bill...
Gary Young spent 10 years working in the US as a journalist for The Guardian. And this week, he's back in the city of Racine, Wisconsin, to report on the midterms.
What's going on there now? The election of our lifetime?
Especially now. This is a political year like none other we have seen in a long time.
An election that probably is one of the most important elections of our lifetimes.
Of our kids and the generations to follow is on the line. It's at stake.
Never have the midterms mattered more than now. 2 years on from the election of the most bombastic, jaw-dropping and deeply divisive Republican president America has ever known, there's talk of a Democratic comeback, a blue wave. But...
I like where we stand in the election. You know, I think that blue wave is being rapidly shattered.
Not everyone is convinced. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in focus, he may not be on the ballot paper, but are the midterms all about Donald Trump? So, Gary, why did you go to Racine?
There were three reasons, really, that I chose Racine in Wisconsin. The first is that Racine generally votes for the president. It's a bellwether county.
Ryan, that's because Racine County can be one of those counties that determines who wins or loses on Election Day.
So Racine voted for Trump. It voted for Obama twice. It voted for Bush twice. It voted for Clinton twice. I think you have to go back quite a long way before Racine does something that the country's not doing. The second reason is that it's in Paul Ryan's district. Now, Paul Ryan is the leader of the House, and he's standing down.
This year will be my last one as a member of the House. To be clear, I am not resigning. I intend to fulfill my served term as I was elected to do. But I will be retiring in January.
And there is a chance, it's not a brilliant chance, but it is a plausible chance that the Democrats could take this seat from the Republicans, which would be totemic. And finally, Wisconsin is the place where arguably the resistance started. Back in 2010, Scott Walker was elected, and he was a very conservative Republican. And there was a huge uprising here. They occupied the Capitol for several weeks. And then they decided to recall Scott Walker. So they wanted a do-over, a bit of a kind of people's vote, Brexit style, like we want another go.
All eyes are on Wisconsin today as Governor Scott Walker faces a recall vote.
Governor Scott Walker is the man at the center of a bitter fight that has cleaved Wisconsin like a block of its best cheddar cheese.
And they lost. They lost the recall. Scott Walker was re-elected. Wisconsin hosted the resistance before it was called the resistance, and they lost. And therefore, this felt like an appropriate place to look at how things would go this time.
Now tell us, why do the midterms matter?
At the moment, both the House of Representatives and the Senate are controlled by Republicans. And so the reason that it matters is because it gives the chance for the opposition party to make some inroads and possibly mount a challenge to the president's agenda. And that's what is forecast to happen this time. That
a blue wave?
We don't know if it will be a blue wave, and that would be if the Democrats really swept the board, as it were, and did brilliantly well. But there's an awful lot of damage, resistance, stonewalling that Democrats can do if they control one of the houses. And that looks like a distinct possibility.
Gary, Donald Trump seems pretty outrageous to us. Surely there's a backlash among Republican voters.
No, not obviously.
I didn't think the tariffs were going to work. I didn't think the backing out of NAFTA was going to work. We're getting a new and improved
So
NAFTA.
Ken Brown wants eye-openers, which sells glasses on Main Street. And he's lived in Racine for more than 20 years. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Republican.
And we're going to win this China war, too. I really do. I believe it. I didn't believe it before, but I think we're going to win the China war. Their economy's suffering right now, and ours is on fire.
There are a range of ways. I mean, he wishes that Trump was less impetuous, but he thinks he's done a good job.
And not just people who are typical Republicans. You also met people who were even former union leaders who were impressed by him.
There is this curiosity, and I did say to one man, Matthew Augustine, who had been a trade union leader. He's semi-retired now.
I was the first union guy in Kenosha to walk with a Republican in a parade.
And do you like Trump?
Oh, yeah. I got on board with him right away because he speaks up and fights back. And he uses the left's tactics against them, and they don't know what to do. They can't handle them.
And I said to him, why are you backing this billionaire boss? So it's interesting to me. You're on the board of the union.
I've seen both sides.
Right, but the guy that you must identify with is a billionaire businessman that you'd be on the other side of the table.
Yeah, but you know what? He talks like you and I do. He's not fake. He's real. And he gets up, he'll give a speech, and it's not scripted, you know.
He's not your typical Washington, D.C. puppet. He's so outside the
box.
Even
the rich people don't like him.
Who's that? Who cuts in there?
That's Matthew's wife.
It's amazing, really, because they decimated, Scott Walker decimated the unions in this area, didn't he?
Yeah, and either one could say it's cognitive dissonance or just extreme loyalty. And then, you know, he's white and he's male, and I think that would play into it too.
But his wife was female, and you met other female Republican voters who didn't seem to have been put off with the Stormy Daniels issues or the pussy-grabbing tape.
So I spoke to Matthew Augustine's wife, Kim. She claimed that she couldn't make up her mind one way or the other about how Trump treated women on the basis of hearsay.
Just as Matt said, I need to see the facts in the actual documentation. I need to see the facts. Okay. I can't do all this hearsay.
So what about when he personally says that he grabs women and he just grabs them and kisses them and grabs them? I mean, that was him saying.
I have not personally seen him do that.
No, but he said it, though.
I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it for myself.
You never heard that? No.
That was behind the scenes at one of the TV shows he did. He said something like that. And men talk like that all the time. I don't either.
I mean, extraordinary. How do you react to stuff like that?
Well, when people don't want to know, they don't want to know. I think the whole world's heard that tape. You know, I don't think that's plausible. And
what is it that they're getting from Trump that means they're just not willing to be angry about these other things? What is Donald Trump offering to people like Matthew Augustine and his wife, Kim?
Well, I mean, one of the things they offer is a vision of the country that they like, you know, kind of nostalgia for a kind of lost past. And then there is, I think, considerable misinformation.
That's what happens, though.
So how's that socialism work for you in England?
We don't have it. Mm-hmm. No. So at one point, Kim asked me, so how do you like your socialized medicine, meaning the NHS? And I said, it's really good, actually.
Not socialism, socialized medicine. How does that work for you there?
Actually, pretty well.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I really...
Sick, though, have you?
Sorry?
You haven't got real sick yet.
Well, I was kind of quite sick as a 8-year-old. I had a hernia. I mean, it's not free. You pay for it through your taxes, and then everybody gets it. And that way, you don't have to worry if you're not working at a particular time. You're free to be ill and also to go to the doctor and be well. It's the most popular institution that we have. It's even more popular than the royal family. And she wasn't having that. When people don't want to hear, then they close their ears and they say, la, 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 you know. The contradiction and the hypocrisy comes in terms of, like, these are people that were very, very excited about the fact that Obama couldn't produce the type of birth certificate that they wanted, whereas Trump hasn't produced any tax returns and they don't care. So the hypocrisy comes in the kind of what would be demanded of another candidate. Imagine if Barack Obama had 3 or 4 or however many kids Trump has got from 3 different women and was in a row with a porn star who he'd paid off. Can you imagine? For the large part, it's not that they don't see who he is. It's that they've decided not to care.
OK, let's talk about how the Democrats are faring.
Thank you. Thank you, Wisconsin.
That's the sound of Bernie Sanders stepping out on stage at a rally you attended, not far from Racine, Gary. He was there for Randy Bryce, the Democrat hoping to get elected in Paul Ryan's old seat.
On November 6th, let's return Paul Ryan's seat. Wait, not Paul Ryan's seat. Our seat.
The crowd sound pretty fired up. I mean, just how energised are Democrats ahead of this vote?
The ones at the rally, they were quite fired up, but I mean, they went to be fired up. But generally speaking, the Democrats that I speak to dare not hope. This has been a rough 8 years for them. Scott Walker was elected, and then Trump won, and nobody saw Trump winning Wisconsin. So the last 8 years have seen a series of defeats in which they have fought. And so people say, we're picking up more excitement this time, a bit more excitement. And yet, for all that, they dare not actually trust their senses because they've been here before. And there is an element of trauma about the last 8 years here.
Sometimes I run a lot into people that say it doesn't matter. And they've just been disappointed so often, or it doesn't matter, or the candidate.
I met Nikki at a demonstration. Are you picking up a different vibe now than before?
I was surprised at the number of people who said that, no, I don't vote, and they just keep walking past you. That seemed to be more than normal.
More than normal.
Yeah.
And all that.
And a lot of them were women, and I was surprised. And I just think that it's just like too much, and people can't deal with it anymore. That's how some people deal with it.
Nikki was quite pessimistic about turnout. There was a poll, I think, maybe 3 months ago, something like that, where people asked what the Democrats stood for. And most people, a plurality of people, said, well, they stand against Trump. And the question is really, is that going to be enough? I don't think it is. I think they're going to need more than that.
It's very frustrating that here's this golden opportunity for the Democratic Party, but you don't see him doing anything.
We met Rob on Main Street. I think he was expressing a very reasonable frustration, really.
You don't see them messaging. You don't hear them saying specifically, here's what's wrong with the way our government's being run, and here's what we do about it. They're going to lose because they're just farting around.
Whatever you think of Trump, he has curated and laid out a particular vision for America. It's melancholic, it's nostalgic, it's kind of aggressive, I think it's kind of misanthropic, it's xenophobic, it's misogynistic. There's a range of things it is, but it's pretty clear. The Democrats don't really have a response to that.
We know the Senate is unlikely, but if they fall short in the House, what does that mean in policy terms?
If the Democrats fall short in the House, then what you will have is, if you can even imagine this, an emboldened Trump. This time, they can't blame the Russians, they can't blame Comey, they can't blame WikiLeaks, they can't blame Hillary, and so we're into dark night of the soul kind of territory. No one can say that in this election, well, who knew what Trump was going to be like or who knew what the Republicans were going to be like. We know. And so that would be a massive defeat. That means a very, very weakened Democratic Party. And among the people that I've spoken to, I think that would be a kind of crushing blow.
Gary, thank you so much. The Guardian will be all over Tuesday's midterms. To read our reporting, including coverage from Gary Young, go to theguardian.com. After the break, why has everyone got it in for vegans? Welcome back. Vegans are in the news after William Sitwell, the editor, should I say former editor, of the Waitrose food magazine, suggested in an email that they should be killed. Now, he's apologised and suggested that was a joke, not very funny, but vegans do seem to inspire a certain level of hatred. Guardian columnist Gabby Hinsliffe asks why.
So I'm not a vegan. I'm not even a vegetarian. I didn't really think there was a name for what I am until recently, which is a person who eats meat most of the time and sort of guiltily eats vegetarian maybe once a week. But apparently that's called being a flexitarian. So that is what I am. But I have to say, you don't have to be a vegan or a vegetarian to be fascinated by this story this week about the resignation of the editor of Waitrose in-house magazine, in-house food magazine, after being rude to vegans. He'd been approached by a freelancer saying, you know, why don't you do a series on vegan cooking? It would be great. Lots of people are interested in veganism now. He emailed her back, how about a series on killing vegans one by one? Ways to trap them, how to interrogate them properly, expose their hypocrisy, force feed them meat? I think it was indicative, the language was indicative of the extraordinary anger, really, some people seem to feel with vegans, which goes way beyond being a rational response to someone saying, you know, I eat plants. And I think that comes down to two things. Firstly, there's vegans slightly make people feel guilty because, to be honest, if you ask yourself as a meat eater to justify killing animals for meat or justify the environmental damage done by factory farming, or it's actually quite hard to do so. The end result comes down to, you know, you eat meat because you like it. It tastes nice. It's not a reaction that makes one feel terribly proud. And I think a lot of meat eaters feel slightly defensive. But I think there's also a separate component to it. That's veganism, along with other lifestyle choices associated with people under 30. It can be intensely annoying to a certain kind of person, a sort of socially conservative, slightly reactionary, very much misses the days when you could smoke in pubs, and enraged by the very idea of being asked to use gender-neutral pronouns. That kind of person who just thinks... God, this is irritating. Why can't we just all eat steak and red wine and not be made to feel guilty about it? But I think there's also a sort of underlying anxiety about being confronted with things changing, and it's not like it was in your day. And also the implication that there's something a bit wrong with how it was before. You know, everyone was very unenlightened up till now, and, you know, millennials have seen the light and the rest of us should sort of follow in behind. And that's what seems to be at the root of this, a feeling that you're being judged for your choices. Change is difficult because it makes you question whether you were right in the past. And I think that's why people get anxious about it. The argument is always that vegans bring, or vegetarians bring it on themselves by being a bit smug or a bit preachy or a bit, often a bit evangelistic. And it's true, you know, there will be smug, preachy vegans. There are smug, preachy meat eaters as well. I mean, the tone of Sitwell's email is quite smug, come to think of it. You know, all sorts of people can be annoying, but generalising from that to saying this lifestyle choice is wrong, I think is a leap too far. I don't think all of us are going to go vegetarian ever, but one in eight of us are now vegan or vegetarian, according to a survey produced for Waitrose, which there might have been a tiny clue there for William Sitwell about which way his employer was leaning. But I think, you know, I sort of think that the tide of history is with the non-meat eaters here.
That's it for today. Go on, subscribe. I know you want to. My thanks to Gary Young, Gabby Hinsliffe, and all vegans everywhere. On Monday, it is time to talk about Brexit. The Today in Focus producers are Elizabeth Cassin, Brenna Doldorf, Leah Green, Lucy Grenwell, Josh Kelly, India Rackerson, Mithali Rao and David Waters. Sound design by Axel Cocoutier. On this episode, we had additional help from producer Bill Healy in Racine. The executives are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard, and the show was developed by Leo Hornack. See you on Monday!